Accession number 20094, reel 14.
George, that's the reel 14.
Remain very high, and as such, the hour 285 always gave excellent results. This was commented on by the Captain F4, the 4th Frigate Squadron, on the results that he recorded and noted during our F4's inspection. Morecambe Bay, I've mentioned F4, Morecambe Bay was part of the 4th Frigate Squadron based theoretically in Hong Kong. The other Bay-class frigates being the White Sand Bay, Cardigan Bay, Mounts Bay and St Bride's Bay. Most of them were operational all the time, so just occasionally one would go in for a 6-week dockyard refit, bottom scrape and what have you, and any modifications to be done. Lieutenant Cassells was always very proud of his electrical department, and very often John Morey, the REA, and myself, we used to be lent out to other ships in the squadron and to other ships. In fact, there were some New Zealand X-Lock class boats. We were lent to them as well, Royal New Zealand Navy, to help and repair their radars. When we arrived at Kure once in Japan, just before the commencement of our Korean patrol, we could hardly hear the signal from the on port wave from the local station in the inland sea. The signal was so weak. So we went across, it was a Type 89, the same as fitted on the Morecambe Bay, actually. And we got that fixed up and working correctly. And so we went on, by this time, around about Christmas time in 1953, we were in Hong Kong. On Christmas Day, we had our usual celebrations, but Morecambe Bay was duty ship, and it was under notice for notice of sea, 4 hours notice for sea. But part of the duty ship, we had to send a petty officer to the local services club, not the fleet club, a local services club, which is near the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, as a liaison and to help to calm any problems and any troubles. I was detailed off. I didn't volunteer. I was detailed off. So Christmas night, 53, and in 53, I went into this club. Unfortunately, as one knows, the Chinese are very, very fond of fireworks. And fireworks are very cheap and plentiful in Hong Kong. Some of the more high-spirited members of the community naval and army, had purchased quite large stocks of these, and they were lighting them and throwing them around in the club with gay abandon. And I had quite a job in stopping it. Eventually I did. I managed to calm it down. The people who organised the club said they actually rang up and got the naval patrol down from HMS Tamar at the shore base. But I said, no, don't go in there. I said, if you go in your uniform, the naval patrol uniform, I said, that's not a cause trouble. I said, just stay on the outside. I said, if our farm one's unruly, I said, I'll get him, I'll bring him to you, you can take him away. I said, but don't go in. And I managed, and that way, we managed to calm it down. And in the end, I managed, with one of the ladies that were there, to organise a big sing song, and they all started singing, and a good time was had by all, and no more fireworks. At the end of the evening, when the club closed, one of the ladies came up and thanked me very, very much, and said, look, we're having a little dinner party tomorrow, Boxing Day. Would you like to come and bring a friend? So I said, well, yes, I'd love to. Thank you very much. So they gave me the address, which is on the peak at Hong Kong. And they said, don't worry, we'll come and pick you up in the dockyard at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll have you picked up. I said, okay. Well, Boxing Day dawned, and we were no longer duty ship. And John Morey, who was a photographic fiend, actually, he said, let's go and get some fresh air. Let's go ashore and get some fresh air. So we put as we were alongside, we were being senior NCOs, we were led ashore in civilian clothing. We went, caught the Peak Railway up to the top of the peak, and we walked around the peak. It was quite an overcast day. Walked around the peak, right the way around to the fishing village of Aberdeen, or the fishing town of Aberdeen, in Hong Kong, the other side of the Hong Kong Island. Both of us taken snaps. He, very professionally, with his twin reflex camera and all the rest of it, all the light meters and all the rest of it, and me with a little humble box brownie. But anyway, when we got to Aberdeen, we said, right, let's go and get a wet, have a drink. There's a pub there called the Bricklayer's Arms. So we went in there to get a drink, and in there were two Americans, absolutely festooned with cameras, and they were American servicemen. They'd won a photographic competition in Japan, and this was their prize, a 2 week all expenses paid trip to Hong Kong. Well, John and these two Americans, they've merely been photographic fiends. They were talking about all kinds of things, which I didn't understand at all, but not being a photographer. And I was just gradually kicking my little box brownie father under the seat so they didn't see it. But anyway, be that as it may, it was rather funny that on two of the photographs that I took, my box brownie came out better than John's with his Riker flicks. But anyway, that's beside the point. In fact, he used my negatives to get some photographs from. We got a taxi from there back to the ship. Got ourselves cleaned up and everything, changed our shirts and everything else. But we still wore civilian clothing. And we were picked up at 7 o'clock by a big gleaming Humber car and taken up to this, well, magnificent apartment in the peak of Hong Kong, which had the most magnificent view of all the way down, right way down to Wan Chai, Mers Bay, right across the Kowloon side, a wonderful view. And there were quite a few interesting people there. The matron from the hospital was there and a few other people. This woman's husband was the area manager for the British American Tobacco Corporation. And this dinner party was, not only was it a this little after Christmas party or just a dinner and something to drink and a chat, it was also in the form of a farewell, as they were in the next week were moving to Sri Lanka, to Colombo, because in common with most non-Asian companies, they were having a lot of problems in Colombo. The government had decreed that all offices, all businesses, had to have at least 50% representation of Sudanese people on the staff. This was the newspapers and all companies. In actual fact, later on, another friend of mine, her husband, actually had to go down. He worked for the Dobbles, and he had to go down to Colombo for this transition period. It was whilst there, someone just happened to look out this view, and we saw this terrific fire over on the Kowloon side in the what we used to call the tin shanty area, the squatters area. It really was a terrific conflagration. It was from where we saw it, you know, the whole area was alight. It was the South China Morning Post called it an inspired miracle, actually, because nobody was injured or burnt. Nobody was missing. None of the quite high-priced properties surrounding the area were damaged or touched. So the real cause of the fire was never known, but at least it got rid of the squatters from the area there. We carried on with our patrols. One of them, a Formosa Strait patrol, we did the tail end of a typhoon. No one was allowed on the upper deck. The ship was being actually twisted around quite a lot, and the torsional twist on the ship unfortunately caused 5 splits on the upper deck of the ship. Some of them were, one of them had let water into the mess decks and things like that in the foreign mess decks, but the one that caused us problems was the one on the funnel deck, which leaked water directly onto the 230 volts 50 cycles generator for the WT office. And of course, immediately blew it up. So we had to switch to the other one, the two. You were up in 24 hours about. Switched the other one. When we got in Hong Kong, we had the unenviable task of getting the old one out, a new one put in. And I seem to be set by 40 alternators and generators in my career in the Navy, but this was another one. I think it was something to do with some birthday, the Queen's birthday or something like that. I don't know what it was. I know it was some official holiday of some sort, and the crew had to make amends, which means that they had the afternoon off. And it was left to three of us. That was John Morey, myself, and Smudgy Smith, because John Petrie had left us by then, to get this horrible great machine out through a narrow doorway. And I managed to get the blocks and tackles rigged up and everything else, and we got that one out. It was lifted off the deck by a dockyard crane, a new one was dropped on, and we got the other one back in there. And we were all buttoned up. In fact, by the end of the first dog, 6 o'clock, it was all shipshape, and we managed to run the WT office from it, switch back from the one that had been running for 48 hours. In early May, we went to Singapore. We went into the dock, bottom scrape, clean up. About half of the crew changed over. John Morey left the ship, so did my friend Piotr Joblin, who was a Navy footballer. He left the ship. And they were replaced by a crew which had just taken over one of a minesweeper called the Lioness. And she was going home as well. And she'd only just, that crew had just come out for this. So they just said, right, your foreign commission's not over. You're going to the Morecambe Bay. And that's how they managed to swap about 50% of the Morecambe Bay's crew. Whilst in Singapore, I was sent for by the new POTEL, George Temple, who I got on very well with, and said, would you like 10-day station leave, 2-week station leave? Well, we immediately thought of the rest camp around the south of the island, and we thought, yeah, that'd be quite nice. So we said, yes. And said, okay. So put your names down. This was at 10:30 in the morning. At 12 o'clock we were sent for and said, right, you've got to draw your pistols and ammunition at 2:30 from the armory. Pistols? Oh yes, didn't you know? Your station leave, you're going to be attached to the army for 10 days. Where? Well, you're going to Kuala Lumpur, first of all. There are 8 seamen going up as well. They're drawing rifles and ammunition at the same time. You, no prisoner, you are the senior petty officer, so therefore you're in charge. When you get to Johor Bahru station, you'll be met by an army captain or someone who will tell you what your duties are for the journey to Kuala Lumpur. So I said, right. So off we go to Johor Bahru that evening. This army, I think it was a captain. He said, Petty Officer Lester. I said, yes, that's me. He said, ah, yes. He said, you're the senior NCO for the train guard. He said, I want one rifleman on each carriage, the end of each carriage. There's a like a veranda. One rifleman on each one of those. You on one, and the other petty officer on another. He said, shortly after we go, he said, after you leave Johor Bahru, it'll be dark. And shortly after leaving the station, all the lights on the train will be extinguished for you, for the journey to Kuala Lumpur. Then he gave us some talk on if attacked, only fire if you can see a target, and how the hell are we going to see a target when it's pitch black? We didn't know. But anyway, we got to Kuala Lumpur without any problem. And myself and three of the ratings, we became attached to the 17th 21st Lancers, Prince Albert's own, on the armoured cars. You must remember that this was 1954, and the Malayan problem was very rife at that time. And all VIPs had to have armoured escorts wherever they went. And all lorries that used to go taking food and supplies out from Kuala Lumpur along the main roads used to have to go in convoy with armed escort. And I did two runs as armed escort there. But the first day was the one I enjoyed best of all, because we went and picked up, was taken down with a sergeant and a corporal to pick up a Daimler armoured car which had been in the workshop being serviced. And on the way back, I was sitting in the gunner's seat in the turret, and we got to a quiet part, and we started blasting off a few rounds here and there, chopping down trees with the Beesa machine gun, and even managed to knock one down with a 2-pounder at 600 yards, which wasn't bad going. We got on very well, that sergeant and I. And I was in the armoured car when we did some doing an escort for a VIP on one or two occasions. But when we went up to the Cameroons, the armoured car were fully manned by the army. There was three armoured cars in a convoy and four troop carriers, armoured troop carriers with troops on, with troops inside. To overcome any ambushes that the terrorists might set. Luckily, we didn't meet any terrorist action. George Temple and his five, they got attached to the Middlesex Regiment. And they actually went, we were all issued with the jungle gear, by the way. And the day they arrived, they said, right, and they gave me a nice big meal, and they were really lashed up really well. The big great big steaks and piles of chips and all. They thought, well, this army life's terrific. I said, well, make the most of it. That's the last decent meal you're going to get for 10 days because you've gone on a 10-day jungle patrol. And they actually went in the jungle for 10 days on a patrol. Occasionally having drops when they reach certain clearings, making certain that clearings that they'd, which used to host people, which had all been cleared because all the natives were living in kampongs. They were all segregated and kept. So if anybody was in these buildings, they wouldn't be natives. They would be communists. They would be terrorists. They had one little skirmish. They had one little skirmish, but whether it was terrorists or not, they don't know. It might have been an animal in the jungle, wild boar or something like that, but causing trouble. But they opened fire and everything else. They didn't find any traces. But they had a much rougher time in their 10 days than I had on mine. I had the luxury of living in the sergeant's mess and having a whale of a time every night. So anyway, we come back from that, and we were told that the Morecambe Bay, the 4th Frigate Squadron, was going to be disbanded. And some of the, in fact, two of the bays had gone home. I don't know which two there were, but two of them had already gone home. Morecambe Bay was, because she had a relatively newish crew on board, in other words, i.e. less than a year, or just on about a year service on board the ship in the Far East, was being earmarked to go on a special cruise home, which was virtually around the world cruise home. So we were all busy looking forward to this. We had a new engineer officer come on board, and whilst the ship was in dock, he discovered, or by his measurements, he thought that the port propeller shaft was slightly out of line, and he got the dockyard staff in and they had a look, and they all agreed that there was a slight misalignment and they tried to correct it. We went out after undocking to do our trials, and then as soon as we got up to more than about 9 or 10 knots, all the white metal bearings, the prop shaft ran out, so we had to limp back on one engine. They did a lot of work, and we went out again, same thing happened. By this time, the rumours that our wonderful round-the-world trip of Rife, that we weren't going to go on, they were going to get another ship to do it instead, to show the flag cruise home. But luckily, better sense prevailed, and they put the so-called misalignment that was in, put it back to as it was, and we went out. We managed to do 17 and a half, 18 knots without any problem, without the bearings melting, so we were okay. We sailed from Singapore. This was the beginning of August, back to Hong Kong, and we said goodbye to all our friends that we made in Hong Kong. Then we sailed up to Japan, to Sasebo, to take our leave of the American fleet, who had worked very closely with during the Korean business, and for which the Morecambe Bay had received accommodation.